Gorgeous George and Goes, are you ready? Junkie Nation, are you ready? Well, let's get it on!
From the fight capital of the world, Las Vegas, Nevada, this is MMA Junkie Radio.
We rollin'!
What's going on, Junkie Nation? Gorgeous George and Goes reporting for duty here on a Monday, ready to talk about the last week of, it's the last week of for the UFC of MMA. It was a UFC fight night that they just had with Lewis and Dawkins as the main event. Nothing really to preview as we go into Christmas. I had to freeze for a second there because it used to be this end of the year event that the UFC always used to have, but apparently, that's that early December pay-per-view now that they've had for the last few years, and then they'll sprinkle in a fight night. So that was it. We'll recap that. We'll also recap from Tampa, Florida, the Jake Paul, Tyron Woodley boxing match, celebrity boxing match. I don't even call it boxing. It's celebrity boxing to me, but it does involve an MMA fighter. So, and to be fair, a YouTube star, an MMA fighter, a football legend, and a basketball player. They were all there. So we'll go over that. Our latest news, MMA Junkie Radio, on a Monday, December 20th. All right, guys. So let's get to the MMA. Here are the results of the fights, and then we'll kind of consume them a few at a time. Jordan Leavitt defeated Matt Sales submission second round. Dontell Mays defeated Josh Parisian TKO third round. Raquel Pennington at a catch weight of 148.5 pounds because it wasn't enough that these two bantamweights decided to go at featherweight. Chisson still couldn't make 146, and so it was a catch weight of 145 and a half. Pennington submitted Chisson. What a disastrous night or week for her. Charles Jourdain defeated Andre Ewell. There was a decision there. So we finally had our first decision after everything got rocking and rolling early. Melissa Gatto defeated Sajara Eubanks. TKO there. Round three. Justin Taffa, speaking of missing weight, he came in at 267. First UFC heavyweight to ever miss weight. So he came in a pound heavy. He defeated Harry Hunsucker. KO finish. Gerald Meerschaert defeated Dustin Stoltzis. Let's see here. That was a submission. That's right. In the third round. Then we get to the main card of Cub Swanson versus Darren Elkins. TKO stoppage there. I got a lot of texts on this one, goes regarding Cub Swanson. Big win for him. First round stoppage there. Gutierrez Pagamro defeated Carlos Diego Fajeda. TKO stoppage there. Second round, Ricky Simone defeated Rafael Assuncao. KO. Second round, Amanda Lemos defeated Angela Hill. Split decision. Bilal Muhammad defeated Stephen Thompson. Unanimous decision. And Derek Lewis knocked out Chris Dawkins. First round there. A lot of finishes. Great way to end the year. There was a lot of great finishes at UFC 269 as well. I think the UFC really, really ended with an exclamation mark. The bonuses went to Amanda Lemos and Angela Hill. Cub Swanson and Melissa Gatto took home performance of the nights. They were at the apex. There was no gate or attendance figures. So there you have it, goes. Just give me your overall thoughts on the event itself, and then we'll go fight by fight.
Overall, it was a good event. Really good. Nice pace to it. A lot of finishes. There were a couple disappointing things, you know, that like the missing weight and all that. Excuse me. But overall, I thought it was a fun card.
Yeah. I don't know if I remember saying that 18,471 were in attendance last Saturday for an $8 million gate. So I'm just saying it now. That's what it was for UFC 269. I think I may have, I may not have, but I usually don't say it because they're at the apex. So there you have it. But that's good money for the company there.
Yeah. I think this card had a lot of fighters that I wouldn't say were like on the verge of being cut or something, but there were a lot of fighters that needed a win to kind of re-cement who they are in this company. And they got it. So, you know, it was like kind of a few feel-good stories as well.
I agree. And now we're off until January 15th. The UFC is off until January 15th. So they have a month off, which will be a good reset for all of their employees. I don't know if that means they don't have to come into the office or what, but there's just no events till January 15th of 2022. That's Chikadze versus Cater. And then 1 week after that, Ngannou and Moreno defend their belts. All right. So one by one, Jordan Leavitt defeated Matt Sales, Dante Mills, not one by one, but I'm just going to group them here. And Dante Almeida defeated Josh Parisian. Couple finishes there. Raquel Pennington over Macy Chisson. Submission there. Anything jump out on those three?
Yeah, I thought Pennington really needed a victory and really needed to not just win, but kind of say the right things afterwards. And I think she did. Man, I really hope she can keep momentum because, you know, this division's interesting again. And this is a fighter that when she's at her best, I think she can give a lot of people problems. Well, there's times where she just kind of, I don't know if she phones it in before, during, or what, but it's just not her. You don't feel like you're watching her. And this kind of felt like a little vintage her.
Yeah. So this would be her third in a row if we were counting it as a bantamweight fight, which I'm probably going to have to do that. Huh?
You kind of have to because it wasn't her fault, right?
Right. And for rankings purposes, I think it'll help her stock. Now, granted, she could put up the claim, well, you know, I did win at 45. I'll take it as a 45er. Amanda, do you want to run it back? Because Amanda Nunes, folks, is still the UFC featherweight champion. She lost her bantamweight title a week ago, but she's still the featherweight champion. But do any of us want to see them two kind of run it back? Nah, I don't personally. I don't think the extra pounds makes a difference, to tell you the truth. I think Pennington is a legit bantamweight. I've even wondered if she could ever drop the bat to a flyweight in the past. But I just think Nunes is going to be so consumed with trying to get her other belt back that this won't matter anyway. But what does this do in terms of her stock at 35? Again, it's her third win in a row. There's Renault, Kianzad, and Chisson since the loss to Holm. She also won over Irene Aldana in a split decision. And, you know, I just think she's going to have to take another fight either way because I don't see how they get out of Pena and Nunes running that back, especially when we talked to Mackenzie Dern. She broke it to us that the UFC is going to Rio de Janeiro in May. So why wouldn't that fight be run back there? You know what I mean? That's almost perfect for Nunes versus Pena. And in the meantime, just Raquel, you know, great win because it was a finish ghost. She's usually involved in a lot of the decisions, and she went through a lot. She defeated an opponent that came in heavy, and I think that should be good enough. But she definitely showed everybody there's still gas left in that tank.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think it's a good win for her. And like I said, this card kind of had a lot of those sprinkled throughout the card.
Yeah. Charles Jourdain defeated Andre Yule. Melissa Gatto defeated Sajara Eubanks. Justin Toffa defeated Harry Hunsucker. Gerald Meerschaert defeated Dustin Stolfus. So I want to concentrate on Eubanks. I honestly thought when they were doing the reality show that she had future champion written all over her. She's had weight cut misses. She's moved up a weight class. She moved back down. When she moved down recently and won her last fight, she sounded like she was done with the BS. And remember, I think that she had some allegations against her as well for domestic, if I remember that, a couple years ago or a while back. So anyway, but that's off to the side. I don't remember hearing too much about it, so I want to focus more on what I remember, and that was when she beat Elise Reed. She sounded like, man, you know, I'm going to turn this bad boy around. I got it figured out, and I'm not going to miss weight again. I bought into it, Ghost. I don't know why. I shouldn't have bought into it, but I bought into it. And so I made my play, prior to finding out that she missed weight again. And she, in this fight, she took her first KO stoppage ever. So she's now back to 500. She's 7-7. And what are you going to do? I don't know what's wrong with this lady, man. I don't know what's wrong with me. I just tend to give fighters a lot of chances. I believe them. Even going, when we get to Woodley, you'll understand a little bit more. I thought I was going to see something different there too, but, any thoughts on this one or any of the other ones like Mearshart or whatever that I just mentioned?
Yeah, I was happy to see Mearshart get a win. I don't know what to do with Sajara Eubanks because I do feel like she could be a lot better than she is. And I already think she's a pretty good fighter. But just, I mean, I know who you're getting at later on in our discussion. And there are a lot of similarities there, too. I just don't get it. You know, there's sometimes where she's put in positions where it looks like she's absolutely clueless. And you look at previous fights and you're like, well, you've been there before and you were fine. Like, I don't know what the hell happens with her. But that was a really frustrating fight.
I never root for fighters to have some sort of a demise or anything like that. But I think I'm entitled. And as a journalist, I'll cover them all or whatever the hell we are. Entertainers, journalists, fanboys, maybe it's a mix of everything. I don't know. But I will say this. There's that scene that we always joke about where it's in Karate Kid. And I know that's an older movie for some, but it's so popular that I think many will get the reference. When Sensei, Kreese, turns his back after Dutch loses to I don't want to say Ralph Macchio, Daniel LaRusso. And he's basically done. He's done with Dutch. And now he's focusing on Bobby Brown and John Lawrence. That's who's left because Tommy's already lost. He got chopped in the throat or something like that. Dutch lost. And Dutch was looking good early on. And then some other joker lost. That might have been Andrew Hsu. I can't remember. But he just kind of turns around. But you know, in his mind, he's going, oh, man. You know, like, what's happening here? And that's kind of me to Eubanks and Woodley in terms of supporting them and thinking they're gonna you know, come through for me gambling-wise. I don't know Eubanks, but I do know Woodley, and he'll always be special to me in the sense that, you know, we covered him from Strikeforce, and he did our show many times, hung out with us in social gatherings for, you know, the junkie gatherings. So that was really, really cool. But just, you know, in terms of gambling on him, I mean, I got to accept that he's just 40 years old and that's that. But that's the same with Eubanks. I'm just done, man.
Yeah, I hear you. I think I was done the fight before, you know, when we talked about this fight coming up, like too many promises that I've been to these types of fights where I walk out just frustrated to hell. Mm-hmm. But you can't take away from what he's done in his career and accomplishments, you know. It's just hard because you're going to be left with this. You're going to be remembering all this stuff. So, man, you said something that I wanted to comment on, and I completely...
Say Kreese?
Well, you know, the guys that lost before that were Lamar from Revenge of the Nerds, and then the fat guy
that's...
Him?
Huh? That's him?
Yeah.
Okay.
And then the fat guy that throws the worst three-punch combo in the history of anything.
But Andrew Hsu wasn't one of them, too?
He was one of the Cobra Kai, but I don't think you see him in the tournament.
Like, he's one of the ones that glares at Kreese when Kreese instructs Bobby Brown to take out the knee, right? Him and Tommy, they give him this look. They both looked at Kreese like, that's dirty, Sensei. You know what I mean? Even though they've been jumping the poor guy 5-on-1, and it's you know, they've subscribed to this for years till they're all black belts. No mercy, sir. And now all of a sudden they have morals.
Yeah.
But yeah, I found another one. Goes and I wouldn't say it's a contest, but we try and find actors that have been in other movies. And then they wind up years later on another show or another movie where you just go, for real? Kind of like what – I think I may have remembered Lamar, someone telling me that or whatever. But for right now, for a second, I really felt like I heard it for the first time. But I already know who he is in my mind, the image. And that's why I was like, no way, because it did kind of look like him. But I was watching Taken 2, the Liam Neeson movies, you know, Taken, you're about to be taken.
Yeah.
And his daughter's Kim. She was taken in the first movie. What that means, if anybody wants to watch, so he's a special forces guy, and when someone's taken, it means, you know, bad crime family or syndicates, they basically kidnap you. Yeah, exactly. And so his line is usually, you're about to be taken, you know, meaning someone's about to take you or kidnap you, and I'm going to go find you and rescue you. And they're good movies. I like them. They're corny, but they're good. And Kim's boyfriend in Taken 2, you know who it is?
I don't really remember I barely remember Taken 1.
It's Casey from Yellowstone.
Oh, really?
Yeah, except if I were to go, hey, Goes, check this out. Guess who that – you'd fucking nail it. I mean, he looks like him kind of, you know. He doesn't look like Casey you know, like it's not like he's dressed anywhere near a cowboy, but you could just tell in his face. It's just a younger version. There's been way better ones that we've done in the past. But yeah, that's him. That's Casey.
That would be a really young Casey, wouldn't it?
Well, I looked and it was 2012. So Kim plays the part of a high schooler because I know that he's given her a driving test. He wants her to pass her driving test. So I imagine she's like a junior or senior.
She's got to make up for being a shitty dad, letting her get taken three fucking times, right?
Well, that's only taken two, so she's only been taken twice. Actually, at that point, she hasn't been taken yet when he meets the boyfriend. But she's been taken once. Although, how's that Liam Neeson's fault? She lied. She goes, I'm going to Paris with my friend, and they have a family there, and they have a house, so I'm good. And he's like, okay. He's kind of a little leery, but it turns out she lied. They were going to stay at that place by themselves. So really, it was the kid that was lying. I don't know that that's Liam Neeson's fault.
Yeah, but after once your kid gets taken once, man, you just can't do that shit anymore. It's like you're watching every step, especially if what he does for a living.
That's where he fucked up because he goes to Istanbul in part two, and the mom, who's Famke Janssen, who was also in Rounders, her and the kid are complaining because they were going to go to Hawaii, but they're not. So he goes, hey, well, since you guys have free time, meet me in Istanbul. Goes and I have been in Istanbul. That's not a place to go. Yeah, you're right. Like Goes is saying, when you have a target on your back, that's just not a place in the world that you want to invite your family to.
Nah.
Have fun, because that risk is high there.
You got to be saying Hawaii, Disney World, Utah, shit like that, man. You don't want to go to any, especially with a target on your back like him.
I couldn't agree more. All right.
What were we talking about?
Well, we were wrapping up the undercard. So the undercard had six finishes, one decision. Everybody's glowing. Tafa made up a little bit for missing weight. It's not like he was off by 8 pounds or nothing. He missed by a weight by a pound. It's just that's really never happened. So it was, you know, an attention grabber. But he did get a nice head kick KO in round one. So I wouldn't say all's forgotten, but that definitely may have cost him in getting a bonus. I mean, you're not eligible for a bonus when you miss weight, and it's not like the UFC says it's 4 and we don't move from that. Last week, I think they had 8. Mm-hmm. Who knows? All right, we get to the main card, Cub Swanson versus Darren Elkins. Now, I used to think the UFC kind of had loser leave town matches, but what I've noticed with your Guidas and Millers, if you're a big name, and I wouldn't say like moves the needle in terms of like you sell pay-per-views, but if people just get excited that you're on a card, you have a following, the UFC will keep you around if you just go out there and fight. That's where they are pride fighting championships, in the sense that they don't seem to care on wins and losses with certain fighters. Unless you're making them big, big checks like JDS and Alistair Overeem. And even though they were getting knocked out, I think the UFC was like, oof, we got to write a big check for these guys, so we'll just part ways. But so I didn't think this was a loser-leave-town match, but I thought what this was like, you ain't going to see a big fight going forward. Like, these guys will be used to, like, the loser of this fight will start to be used as a springboard for younger talent. Albeit, you know who's an example of that goes? It's like an Eddie Wineland. He's had to do that dance a few times.
Yeah, basically anybody who, well, yeah, Eddie Wineland. Yeah, he got, You know, I actually thought that was kind of a dangerous fight when they gave him Sean O'Malley. Eddie Wineland, when he's on, he can fuck someone up, dude. But yeah,
that's how a corn-fed hillbilly get paid. I think he told us that once.
Mm-hmm.
Or no, that's how a corn-fed hillbilly gets down. I had to show him how a corn-fed hillbilly gets down. Notice I had to say that's what he said. Because trust me, man. Hey, man, you can't be saying that shit nowadays. Cub Swanson, big win. It was a spinning wheel kick with some punches. It was in round one. It was quick. And, you know, I think I was driving to Cali at the time. And so I was calling people to kill time a little bit. And Big Ralph was telling me, what do you think? Big Ralph, somebody that knows Swanson through us for years. He goes, does he still got it? I go, let me tell you something, Big Ralph. And I go, I would probably say this with Cub next to me as well. Cub's obviously going to be strong early on. He's definitely always had some pretty nice hands. He's worked hard, you know, and they've stayed true to him. And Elkins has this tattoo on his chest that says damage, and he takes damage. And if you don't put him away, you are in trouble as the fight goes on. You know, he'll come back and he'll take you down, ground and pound you or submit you. And so Cub has to constantly be on his toes, keep his mind sharp in the game, and hopefully he either KOs him or wins the first two rounds. And if he has to lose the third, you know, he loses the third. I don't know. But I just know that this guy's a zombie. He doesn't go away. So I was kind of shocked that Swanson put him away that early, to tell you the truth. I just thought this fight was going to be, if it was a stoppage in round three or a decision split or for either guy, who knows. But I'm happy for Cub. Good for him. He's still in the game, and now he wants to go down to bantamweight.
You know, that's something that he's kind of teased his entire life. Hell, he's even teased going up. But I don't know. At this age, I don't know if that's the right move. I mean, he looked good in this fight, and I think there's good matchups. He can have fun out there. But, boy, I almost got emotional watching that. Like, the process of him going through that, and then at the end – being able to take that picture with all your kids, with your wife, your training partners. Holy crap, man. That was super, super cool considering everything he's been through in his life. And, you know, the way he was brought up. I mean, talk about turning your life around. That dude's something special. And to always make weight, you know, to always put on a great show. That guy, like, I don't know that you could throw him in the Hall of Fame, but he has kind of like a Hall of Fame type career. You know what I mean?
Yeah. A lot of longevity. A lot of it would be based on success and longevity. He hasn't won a major title in terms of his time in the WEC or in the UFC. But still, again, if you lump him in there with the Guidas and Millers and the time that he's logged in the sport, the eyeballs he's helped bring in, because – his fights were high-profile fights at one point. I remember he got to the point where he was right up there, you know, and they asked him, who do you want next? He goes, I don't beg. I wish he would have said something and said a name, but I clearly remember that one. I think it was in Tennessee. He may have just beaten Choi or somebody. But he was right there, you know, where he possibly could have got a title shot. And that was a long journey back because he's had some hard days. He's broken his hands many times back in the day. He had that loss to Jens Pulver, you know, where he probably beats Pulver 8 out of 10 times. Not to diminish Pulver in any way. It's just it got proven because Pulver after that was just taking a lot of losses. But he rose to the occasion, you know, and he got choked out. And I guess Cubs still needed that seasoning. But, you know, Pulver was obviously older, and his best days were when he was a UFC lightweight champ. Lightweight, by the way. This was a bantamweight. Oh, sorry, a featherweight fight. Eventually, I think Pulver finished as a bantamweight. But then the 8-second loss, I believe, it was to Jose Aldo, the knee. He had some personal stuff that happened as well that we know about.
The Lamas fight stung because he was winning.
The Lamas fight stung. I agree. And then the submission grappling event where he just shows up as part of Team WEC and he goes home with a torn ACL. I just know it was a very, very serious knee injury that kept him out a whole year. He also lost his manager and best friend, Kami. You know, all that, the last two things I mentioned, all in the last couple of years, that's brutal. Now that, as you're adding to your family, remember he had a pair of twins and then another kid. So he's got three altogether. Now, obviously, I'm not dismissing that as sad. The other events I mentioned were sad. This is obviously joy to him, but it's a lot of work. You know what I mean? As you're trying to survive versus these young killers that have no responsibilities, and now you have three responsibilities. He's been through a lot, you know, but good for him. He's still chugging along, and that was a big win over someone everyone respects.
Yeah, you know, Darren Elkins, dude. Holy crap. I mean, we could probably sit down and do the same thing that we just did for Cub for Darren. That's just a great guy, man. He's such a nice cat. You always know you're going to get a great fight out of him. But it is scary, like, the damage that he does take. You don't want anything bad to happen to him long term.
I agree. Elkins, who at once was 24-5, riding a 6-fight win streak, then hit he ran into soon to be what was going to be champion soon, and that's Alexander Volkanovski. That started a 4-fight losing streak. Then he came back with a 2-fight win streak, which included 2 wins, and this would have been 3 in a row if he had beaten Cub Swanson. Now, in no way am I plugging him, as he would have then been, you know, in the midst of a run for a title. I think he still had way, way more to go, even if he beat Cub. But, yeah, man, these guys have been all about streaks, and this one will be a tough one for them. We'll see. It gets tougher when you see a 30, like a 36, a 37. As you start climbing in those lower weight classes, you just start to wonder, you know, is this it or whatever. But, again, congrats to Cub, and I'm sure we'll see Darren again. I think the UFC will still gladly promote him. The next fight had Carlos Diego Fajeda, who at one point goes, I remember when he beat Anthony Pettis, was 17-2. He was a ranked fighter. He had won 6 in a row. OAM, Jared Gordon, Kyle Nelson, Rustam Kabilov. He's tough, man. So is Merabek Tusamov. And then Anthony Pettis, big, big name. And then since then, he's taken a 3-fight losing streak. Beneil Dariush, who's on his own streak. That was a split decision, by the way. Gregor Gillespie and Matthias Gamrot was the winner on Saturday night. Matthias Gamrot is 20-1, I believe. Let's see, where's he at? He's out of Poland, KSW guy. Yeah, he's up to 20-1, and he's now beaten Carlos Diego Fajeda, Jeremy Stevens, and Hot Sauce, Scott Holtzman. So, you know, he's doing good for himself.
Yeah, Gamrot is a tough cat. He's a tough kid, man, and I like him. Speaking in English as best as he could at the end, you know, his call outs. That dude's tough, man. He left an impression, I think, for a casual fan that's watching that would want to see him fight again. It was a connection. You know, he just had that fighter instinct. Very good performance, and I can't wait to see him fight again, too.
Mm-hmm. I would agree.
I'd love to interview him. I'd love to interview him if you have a connection to him. Uh-huh. I'd love to get him on the show. He seems like a cool cat.
Okay, I'll work on that. Next, we have Rafael Assunção, who at one point had like an 8-fight win streak, 7-fight win streak, excuse me, until he lost to TJ Dillashaw in 2016. It was UFC 200. Then he came back with another 4 in a row. These streaks are tough in these divisions. And especially with when I tell you some of the names that he had beaten at the time. Remember, at the time, these were... They sound bigger than they were now, but they were big back then. Eduardo Tamura, Easton, Von Lee, TJ Dillashaw, Pedro Munhoz, and Brian Caraway. So he's 1-1 versus TJ Dillashaw, because then he took a loss to TJ Dillashaw, the one that I mentioned. But then he comes back and beats Aljamain Sterling, Marlon Moraes, Matthew Lopez, and Rob Font, for crying out loud. He gets to 27-5. And then, as of late, he's taken a loss. He's only fought once per year in 2018, 2020, and 21. He did have 2 fights in 2019. It just seems like there's been a lot of lulls in between when he fights throughout his career. He's now 40 years of age, if I'm not mistaken, he's 39. So he's rapidly getting there. But the 4 in a row, those have been some killers too. So now he's 1-1 against Marlon Moraes because he lost there. He lost to Corey Sandhagen and lost to Cody Garbrandt, that big, big KO punch about a year ago or 18 months ago. And then now Ricky Simon gets him. So Assunção has just been through, like, a roller coaster ride, you know. But he's had a respectful career too.
I don't know what to do with Ricky Simon. Yeah, you know, sometimes he's a tough cat for anyone, and he disposed of him. There was no questions at all in that performance. But Ricky Simon, sometimes, like, he'll look great, and then sometimes just not so much. Like, I don't know what we have here with this kid. And he's fun. Like, when you give him the mic, he's pretty funny. I like his, did you see his comment towards us, towards Junkie?
No, I didn't hear it.
That we did him dirty, because on the article of a story, the picture that we picked was like a picture of him. Remember that dumb face he used to make when I was a kid with your teeth? He yeah. almost had like a picture like that where you kind of look at it and you go, oh, yeah, I think we could have found a better one. But he's got like a good personality. He's a cool cat, but I just don't know what we have with him as a fighter.
Well, Simone was, let's see, he had gotten to 15-1 after he beat Dvalishvili, Montel Jackson, and Hani Yahya. Then he took that loss to Uriah Faber when Uriah Faber kind of came out of that retirement. Remember that?
Uh-huh.
That TKO stoppage was, it hurt him. It kind of set him back a little bit. And remember, this is a clogged up division, the bantamweight. Then he lost to Rob Font. Now, losing to Rob Font, no shame in that, because as Rob Font just proved, he's up there. He's top five, top three, maybe in the division. Probably top five, to be fair. And so that loss was just, you know, to a guy that's there. I'm not taking anything away from Faber. He's a Hall of Famer for sure. Well, he is in the Hall of Fame. But when he came back after that layoff, that's probably a fight that Simone needed to win if he wanted to prove that, you know, hey, I belong at the top and I want to be fighting the top guys. That's the one that I think hurt him, and that's why he kind of struggled to kind of keep getting his name out there. But the one thing this guy has, man, is a motor. He can wrestle, and he can go hard for 15 minutes, probably 25 if he needs to. And so he actually makes his fights exciting because of that pace he puts on. He's come back and beat Ray Borg, Gaetano Perello, Brian Kelleher was big, and now Rafael Santos big. But he needs these top names, the skins on the wall that matter, which are the top five guys, a Sanhagen, a Font, Edgar, somebody, because right now he still keeps hovering in that 15 to maybe 8, 9, 10 range.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, man. Hopefully. I mean, you know, you get a win here to end the year, and then hopefully he can put together some kind of streak, because I think he's talented. I really do, and I think he's very likable. I think he can go places.
Agreed. Amanda Lemos defeated Angela Hill. Split decision here. I kept seeing stuff online that said, oh, my God, they got it wrong. The judges suck, blah, blah, blah. What were your thoughts? Did you think they got the right hand raised?
I probably would have given it to Angela Hill, but I didn't think it was, like, anything out of this world.
You weren't ready to drive to the Apex and pick it?
No.
We must change the judges. We must remove the judges. What would be your picket chant?
Mm.
No Roger, no rerun, no rent?
No, it would be don't judge me, something like that, something stupid.
That was stupid, because you can come up with better than that. You would actually have a sign that says don't judge me as you're picketing bad judges?
No judgment? I don't know.
Terrible judgment. Terrible judgment. All right. All right, so yeah, you know, props to Hill, who I think had her 19th fight as a strawweight. I thought she was going to get her hand raised. But it could be that we all just have a soft spot for her because of what she's done, always being ready, stepping up the fight. She's in the podcast world. She does some work as a host for UFC and ESPN. But like you, I wasn't outraged.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it wasn't as bad as everybody was making it out to be. But yeah. I would have given it to Hill. If it were me, if it was Judge Goes, I would have given it to her.
Mm-hmm. Lemos is now 11-1-1. She's beaten Souza, Montserrat Ruiz, and Angela Hill. She's riding a 5-fight win streak in the UFC. So that's pretty big. And she's done well since she dropped the straw, because she started off as a bantamweight, if I'm not mistaken. So she's dropped a couple weight classes, and she also gets a fight of the night bonus, which maybe that might help Hill a little bit drown her sorrows, an extra $50,000 during the Christmas season. That's not a bad thing. Bilal Muhammad, oh, man, goes, he just throttled Stephen Thompson. Nobody does that to Stephen Thompson. A, Thompson's hard to get a hold of, whether you're trying to hit him or just put yourself in a position to wrestle him. But that apex octagon is only 25 feet long, whereas the big pay-per-view octagon is 30 feet long. And what that equals is 33% more real estate for him to use that footwork, that space, for him to move around. Sometimes he's involved in boring fights because he just kind of strikes like a cobra. He's in, he's out. He likes to play high-speed chess, isn't worried too much about finishes. If they come, great. And if not, then he'll just, you know, he'll win the way he wins. But in this case, Bully wanted none of that, man. He bullied him.
I got to be careful what I say here because I don't want to make it sound like I'm disrespecting Bilal Muhammad, but he looked so good in there that I almost had to sit there and go, who is this cat? And it's not that he hasn't fought well before, but he showed me something in this fight where you're like, holy shit, dude. Like, if this guy can keep this and even keep it, like, is he really getting better too on top of everything? Like, I just couldn't stop thinking about this performance. You don't do that to a lot of fighters, let alone Stephen Thompson, the way he did. And he really backed it up, you know, because when you speak to Bilal Muhammad, he's constantly telling you about the evolution of his game. You know, he changes a small team, but he gets shit done. He just gets it done. And that really made me want to see him again and in a really high-profile fight.
He needs that finish, and the finish will be that exclamation point where you get all primal and DC or Rogan. They're just fired up to talk to you, you know, because even those interviews after the fight, they're I don't care what anyone says, you kind of take it an extra notch, whether it's Anik, Rogan, DC, Felder, because you know that something special just occurred, and I've noticed that they have this high level of energy. Bilal's had a lot of wins. A lot of them have been decisions, so his climb has just been slower, you know, and these names are good. Look, the win streak he's on, 6 in a row. Millender, Sato, Lyman Good, Diego Lima, Damian Maia, and Stephen Thompson. The Leon Edwards fight went down as a no contest. That was the accidental eye poke. But other than that, you know, on record, he's been winning. And then if you toss out the Jeff Neal loss from 2019, January, before that he had 4 wins. So you could safely say he's won 10 of his last 11. But why is there no, like, excitement like you've seen a little bit more out of Luque, for example? It's because Luque he's been getting those finishes.
Yeah, that's a good
point. You know, and Edwards, he's been exciting at times, except he's had long stretches where he doesn't fight. He had this eye poke. He had the Diaz win where he kind of was just beating the shit out of him. And then Diaz has a great fifth round, and he almost finishes Leon Edwards. So Leon Edwards is like struggling to get across that finish line where he's finally next against Usman, and it looks like he's finally going to get it, but it's been a long road. So you can be on this long road like these guys have, because to win 10 out of 11 and still not be getting a whiff at a title shot, that sucks. But I think it's due to those decisions that Bilal Muhammad's had versus the wins. But make no mistake, when you beat Maya and Thompson, those are some of the toughest puzzles to get past. Mm-hmm.
So when you blend all of that, right, the fact that he's getting better, the way he looked in this last fight, if he can get some finishes, seeing his face, you know, on the desk, I really think 2022 can be a very good year for him.
Yes. He just needs to pop somebody's chin, finish him, and then he'll take this huge, huge step. Usman probably has Edwards. We know that. Who this guy may get next, I don't know. But the guys that are going to be lingering around looking for fights are Covington, Masvidal. These are big names. And Gilbert Burns, you know, he's got to get in there with one of those guys, I think, because they have name power. More than likely, he could probably headline a fight night or just get on a pay-per-view card if he can match up against one of those. He's got to pick a fight with one of those, in my opinion. Jeff Neal just won. Maybe he could try and avenge that loss, but I don't – man, he needs to speed it up. He's now 33 years old, and he's winning. I get that, but it gets risky. You know, at some point in time, someone's going to take you out, and you don't want that to happen before you get a title shot.
Mm-hmm.
So, congrats to Bilal Muhammad. Stephen Thompson says he's broken. No, he's heartbroken, but he's not broken. Same thing Tyron Woodley said. So that must be the rebuttal of the month or something, because I heard it twice. He's 38 years of age. He apologized to his team, his teammates. Same thing, I guess, his coaches, his fans. He's now lost to Gilbert Burns and Bilal Muhammad. No one's finished him, but they decisioned him. Before that, he beat Jeff Neal and Vicente Luque. And Masvidal, going back to November of 2017. The Pettis KO was a tough one to take. But I'm telling you, this guy's he's had some skins on the wall, so he's gonna be able to chug along. I just think his best days are behind him, but he's still gonna always be able to chug along. And he'll just have to pick his next fight carefully. But if I was him, I would get on a pay-per-view. He needs to operate under in a big octagon, not the little octagon.
You know, I'm curious, like, how many fights are left on his contract. If there aren't that many, I wonder if he wouldn't be better suited going someplace else and just being a bigger fish in a smaller pond.
It's a fair point. Yeah. All right. So now we get to the last two fights of the night. Or sorry, that was the co-main event. The main event was Derek Lewis versus Chris Daukaus. This one didn't go long. Derek Lewis does what he does. That's why he holds the record for most KO finishes, I believe. And he KO'd Chris Daukaus. He gave Chris Daukaus a loss that he hadn't had, like, in five fights, especially not in the UFC. He was 4-0 in the UFC. He now goes to 12-4. He had beaten Abdur Akimov, Olenek, Nascimento, and Parker Porter. Now he loses to Derek Lewis. This was a big step up for him. And for Derek Lewis, let's not forget, folks, Derek Lewis has a card he can play. A, he's super popular. B, he just always seems ready to fight. Unless he has, like, an injury, he doesn't really seem like the type where, oh, I need to decompress or this or that. You know, and unless you're looking at, like, when he beat Volkov and then he had to fight Cormier, like, a few weeks later. Yeah, he probably needed some time off after that. But he just likes to stack up paper. And that's why he's always ready to fight. Now, he did lose to Gon, and that fight was rather – it wasn't his best fight. Gon just seems to be a beast at this point. But he holds a win over Francis Ngannou. So, what does that mean? It means I think he should just stay ready and kind of hover. Right? I mean, I don't think I'm too crazy here. You might as well play that card if you have it. And either ask to be the sub on a fight where more than likely both guys will make weight. You just get paid. You get a front row seat on Saturday. But if something were to happen to Gon, you could slip in there because the UFC could go, the last man to give Francis Ngannou a loss.
Mm-hmm. Well, Dana said he should do that. And he said, well, I can't remember his exact quote, but he said, I guess I will, you know, like something like that.
Who said that?
Derek.
Okay.
But yeah, I mean, that scenario makes a lot of sense. You know, he's got to do something like that. But you got to hope it's not Francis that gets hurt, right? Because nobody wants to see Gon and Lewis again right after it just happened. It was very decisive.
Right.
Derek looked good in this fight, you know, but he does take that leg kick. Like, he just basically awards whoever he's fighting the opportunity to do that. And I thought he would learn a couple lessons from the Gon fight. But he was getting popped with it. But he relies so much on his hands. And, you know, to be fair, eventually he usually does get what he wants. And he got him with a good punch and then followed it up with a barrage. But, I mean, that's what Derek Lewis does. He comes in, he knocks you out, collects that paycheck, and on to the next guy. But you're right, that little card that he could always play with Francis Ngannou, that'd be a nice little payday. And even if he went in and got mopped up by Francis Ngannou, it'd still be 1-1.
Because you know what I think would be a good insurance fight? I think that you're right. We can't have Gon versus Lewis again. Gon's the interim champ, so it'd actually be a title defense for Gon if something happened to Francis, and Lewis had to step in for him. We only want the insurance for the undisputed. But regardless, how about Lewis is a mixed martial artist, but I don't think it's unfair to also say he brawls too, right? He's part brawler. He's not a purebred mixed martial artist. You know, if he was a dog and you said, hey, what's your breed? You know, then he's part mixed martial artist. He's a guy, he's a brawler too. That's what Tai Tuivasa is. Why not those two guys? You both can make 265. You both will put on one hell of a show. Just get on this card. And Tuivasa's on a streak too. So Tuivasa, if Ngannou gets hurt, or just for whatever reason can't make it, definitely not what I want. But it's, if that happens, then Tuivasa, you fight Gon for the interim title, I suppose. All right, I think everyone could stomach that, digest that. And if Gon gets hurt, then Lewis, you step in for Gon and you fight Ngannou. You know,
my mouth would water just seeing that on a card. I'm down.
And I think both guys could be convinced to fight what would be about 3 week notice, man. But you write those guys big check. You're either getting shoeys or you're getting, you know, that role that Ngannou does on the ground, you know, but you're going to get yourself a great fight.
I'm down.
Write them both some big checks. That fight card could use it, folks. So now that we've kind of recapped this fight card a little bit, and I told you they're not doing anything until January. The fight card in January, it's UFC 270. I'm just going to be honest with you. I think it's great. The 1-2 punch is great, but it's missing that fight that could really, really, I think, put people over the edge. They were trying to get Dustin Poirier versus Nate Diaz. Imagine Dustin Poirier fighting so soon after he just lost the title, but that's how bad he wants to fight Diaz. But Diaz says, I guess they weren't willing to offer him as much money to fight Poirier as he wanted. Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I mean, I don't know. I guess he fought Pettis. It's not like he's always going to make the Conor McGregor money, right? But I would love to see that fight underneath Marino, Figueiredo, and Ngannou. The rest is okay. Hardy versus Olenek, Stamen versus Nurmagomedov, Evolev versus Topuria, Botello versus Kim, Alvarez versus Della, Gravely versus Oliveira, Vieira versus Terman. We went over this last week. You guys know. Steamroller, he's on the card as well. But you're basically like, yeah, let's get to the title fights. Right? That's not unfair, right?
You need that Cody Garbrandt, Kai Kara France type fight. Just one more, you know, one more sprinkle in there.
Yeah. Or Masvidal versus Edwards. Just something aside from the title fights where you're like, yes. Yeah. You know, this one's getting the real party started. Mm-hmm. We're done with the appetizers. We ate. Now the DJ is going to crank up the music. What's going on, you know? And this one lacks it. But if you throw in Tai Tuivasa in there with Derek Lewis, oh, man, I think that would be tremendous. Or if they can come around and sign Dustin Poirier versus Nate Diaz. I goes, to tell you the truth, as much as that would be a great fight, I'd rather see Poirier 1 month later at UFC 271, which has Israel Adesanya and Robert Whittaker. I think I would rather see him there. It gives him a little bit closer to 2 months. This was a lot, you know, this was a lot. And I love to be entertained by these guys and gals, but as much as I want to see that, I'd rather make the other fight. I think the other fight kind of serves its purpose. It's a great banger. And it's insurance for the heavyweights. And then it gives Poirier a little bit more time to heal. And let's see him fight Nate Diaz at 271.
So people love that matchup. And I'm not saying it's not a bad one. But the one that I like more is I'd like to see Michael Chandler fight Nate Diaz. I don't know why. I feel like that would be a better fight.
Yeah. But Chandler's got it in his head that he's fighting for a title again soon. And so does beating Diaz get you closer there? Oh, I don't know, man. I think right now you got to beat. That's why he fought Gaethje. So he's probably got to fight Makhachev or Dariush. that fight's not still till next year. Because the winner of Makhachev Dariush will probably get the winner of Gaethje versus Oliveira. The loser of that fight is a guy coming off a 9-fight win streak or a 7-fight win streak. No shame in fighting that guy. I think that's who Chandler would be better served to fight. And then if he wins that one, then maybe he might even have to take one more, because that's when McGregor comes back and he gets even more clogged at the top. I don't think McGregor walks into a shot, but him and Poirier have kind of traded some barbs too. Chandler versus Poirier. Remember, Poirier was asked to fight Oliveira. Sorry, he was asked to fight Chandler. And he goes, no, Chandler doesn't deserve, you know, he hasn't punched the clock in the UFC like the rest of us. And so they go, but that's the fight. And he goes, nope. So then Chandler fought Oliveira. Now, granted, Poirier also knew that he had that possible big fight coming up against McGregor for the third time. And that was obviously a big check. But I remember him saying something like that. And that's why Chandler got to fight Oliveira.
But the only reason Poirier would fight Nate is on that quick notice is because it's Nate, right?
Right.
So, I mean, that fight would just have to be later down the road, yeah.
I also believe Chandler needs some time off. You know, he fought foolishly in the last round. I love the kid, and he wants to be a world champion, and I'd love to see the belt around his waist one day. But when he was fighting Gaethje in that third round, he, you know, and I get it, he's in there, and they've taken some shots. Who knows what's going through their head? But, you know, if we're going to give them credit for remaining calm and composed in the heat of battle, well, when you don't do that, you also have to understand there's going to be some criticism. I don't want you giving away shots at your chin by walking up to somebody with your hands down and letting them, you know, tee off just so that maybe you can tee off. I mean, maybe that might even be a strategy, because he couldn't get to Gaethje as cleanly as he was. But at one point, he was hurting Gaethje with his hands cleanly, the way the strategy was laid out. And I was hoping that he could maybe come back to that, you know, if that's what he – I think that would have been his best shot, you know, to win the fight. But Gaethje at the end was the guy that stayed calm and composed, and he was the one that won the fight, and now he's going to fight for a world title. But my whole point is that was a damaging fight for both guys. I really want to see Chandler take a little bit of time off. I wouldn't want to see him fight Nate Diaz in January.
Not in January. I'm just saying that fight to me is – I'd rather see that fight than the Poirier fight.
Yeah. Well, Poirier and Diaz has heat. Chandler and Diaz, I don't remember if they have heat.
They don't. I'm just saying I think Poirier would be like a little bit more technical in the fight. And I don't know that there would be like – I think the buildup in Chandler and Nate would be a lot more fun. That, and then I just think the fight would be a lot more fun. Unfortunately, it's because Chandler can be reckless at times.
Yeah, I need him to dial it in. I need him to be how he was in that fourth round when he beat Eddie Alvarez in their first fight. You know, he was getting out of some pickles. But he was young at the time, and he wasn't worried about entertaining. He was worried about being a world champion. That's when he became a world champion at Bellator. And he was so close against Oliveira. I mean, he hurt Oliveira really, really bad. He hurt Gaethje really, really bad. He definitely hurt Dan Hooker really, really bad. So he's proven that he can get there. But he needs to come back and just choose his opponents wisely and fight like – the way he would, the same way he probably wrestled at Missouri, you know, the strategy to win. It is prize fighting, it is entertainment and all, but I think you can still do both together in that division. All right, so that was the UFC fight card. I guess some of the latest news that has come out over the weekend. Well, no, let's not talk about the news now. Woodley versus Jake Paul goes, what were your thoughts on this fight, this boxing match?
Well, you know, I didn't get to see the whole thing, but Tyron just didn't seem to do what he promised everybody he was going to do. When you think about how mad he was at the scoring from the first fight, you would think he would have more output in this fight to kind of negate that. But he didn't really do that. and then eventually, but I would have never imagined him getting knocked out, getting even stopped by Jake Paul, but knocked out cold like that. Holy crap, man. That sucks for him. You know, that really, really, really does suck for him. And Jake Paul, like, again, I didn't even know who the hell this guy was 2 years ago. I didn't watch Disney. I didn't do any of that. I barely watch YouTube. But boy, has he made an impression. And I'm actually excited to see him fight again. Like, he's done a great job. I can't hate on him.
Yeah, I agree with everything you said. Tyron Woodley was on his way to losing a decision, it looked like. And to tell you the truth, it's not like Jake Paul had that much activity either. But he was winning the rounds. I think he had 249-45s going into that last, into the sixth round is when the fight ended. So he had basically won four rounds to Woodley's one, according to two judges. And then one judge, I believe, had it 48-47. So he had it 3-2, two had it 4-1. The ones that had it 4-1, Woodley would have had to win the last three rounds just to get the draw. But draw's not a win. It was an eight-round fight. Unless he actually happened to knock down Jake Paul. But again, keeping it real, he wasn't doing enough activity for us to lead us to believe that that may happen. So he's probably going to walk out of there with a draw, which does that necessitate the third fight? No, the third fight comes from you beating Jake Paul, and then I bet you some rematch clause kicks in, and then even bigger fight where you're the A side, you know, you can drive it home. It didn't appear to me he was fighting for that. Now, some will say he took the fight on 10 days notice. Yeah, that's what I thought too, until he said nope. He said, I thought something might happen with Fury, and I stayed ready, and I'm ready, and I'm done talking, and I'm going to knock him out, well, you know, all that. He wasn't fighting like that. The KO was horrible. I don't blame anyone for asking a 40-year-old, you know, are you going to think about hanging it up? Because he exited MMA with four losses. Now he's had the two losses in boxing. It's a fair question. He seems put off by that because he says that, hey, look, no, I don't want to. I just got caught with my hand down. But again, if you want to continue boxing, you got caught with your hand down against a guy who's yet to beat a boxer. He's really only beaten MMA fighters and another YouTube guy. I just don't see there's a boxing career here, unless it's a celebrity boxing career. Sure, if there's another celebrity boxer out there, okay. Like, I guess if you're going to fight Deron Williams, maybe, who beat Frank Gore, sure. If there's money for that, sure. But that's a vicious KO. Take some time off. If you want to keep cashing them checks, cool. But I think with Jake Paul, it's over. And now I don't know who we'll see against Jake Paul next. Anderson Silva, Vitor Belfort. You know, I don't know. I hope it's an MMA guy for sure.
Mm-hmm. What do you think Dana White has to say about all this? When Dana White hears, you know, what Jake Paul says, does it sting him a little bit? Does he not give a shit? What do you think he looks at?
What did he say? I just took down your whole company or something like that?
Yeah, he said, like, I just took out some of your former fighter. Like, I'd have to look at the quote exactly. But he kind of came at Dana White and MMA pretty strong on that one.
Yeah, I think if you're Dana White, you're obviously not bothered by what he said. They just had a tremendous year, and they just had huge, huge cards. What probably stings him the most is the fact that that guy's kind of pulled back the curtain a little bit on fighter pay. Mm-hmm. That probably stings because that's an ongoing war he's had against media and many others. That Darren Rovell guy, and then, you know, mixed martial arts media, former fighters. So he's got to keep that up, you know. But in terms of, like, did that hurt, you know, his business or anything like that? No, he probably laughs it off. But I know Dana will pile on Jake Paul someday when he gets his ass kicked. He said, embarrassed your whole company. No, you didn't embarrass the whole company. I mean, Tyron Woodley's, again, left on a four-fight losing streak. So, no, the day he fights a champion and does that, if he does that to Kamaru Usman, possibly, because, A, Kamaru Usman is being hailed as a – that's from Dana White's mouth, not my mouth, as the best welterweight ever, the number one pound-for-pound fighter in his company. So, yeah, if you were to send him over and that happened, he could say that, and that would have a lot more teeth. But against Woodley, no, it doesn't. I'm sorry, it just doesn't. And so he probably laughs it off. But he probably is seething because he probably betted against Paul. He probably would have shown the ticket, you know, especially if Woodley came through. And then he would have said, now you're gone forever, you're irrelevant. And he didn't get a chance to do that. So that probably pisses Dana off a little bit.
Mm-hmm. But, I mean, Kamaru Usman is the welterweight champion of the UFC and MMA organization. It's just not the same. Like, you know, go, all right, you get to win in boxing, cool. That's boxing, you know, like we all know that if Tyron Woodley and Jake Paul met at Sam's Club, it's going to be a different story, right? So I don't know how much – I think it probably bothers Dana, but I don't think it keeps him up at night.
Right. But at Sam's Club, I want to see Woodley throwing leg kicks and wrestling. Forget about the hands. Just forget about the hands. You know what I mean? Like, these aren't four-ounce gloves. This is boxing, and this kid has been training in boxing for 3 years. And he's a pretty good athlete. Him and his brothers are him and his brother is a pretty they're pretty good athletes. They're just not like a YouTube sensation in the sense of a YouTube sensation, like, oh, this guy, you know, he goes out and does wacky things and that's it. He's an artist. No, he's an athlete who happens to do wacky things and he's been successful at it. And then he decided to, you know, train and he's younger, so that's that. At this event, we also had a few other matches that I guess kind of matter. Amanda Serrano defeated Miriam Gutierrez. Deron Williams defeated Frank Gore. We had former basketball against former football. You know, Gore is the third time, the third leading rusher of all time in the NFL. Liam Parra versus Yomar Alamo. Chris Avila versus Anthony Taylor. Avila was there backed up by Jake Shields and Nate Diaz. They are teammates of his, so they were there. He, I mean, he's had his little run in MMA or whatever, but it's nothing remarkable. I think he's a 500 fighter as well. But he went in there and boxed, and he won. So, you know, good. However, when they were there, Jake Shields had a little bit of a run-in with Ariel Helwani. I thought Twitter was interesting. And Nate Diaz and Gamebred, they kind of exchanged some barbs throughout the weekend. What are your thoughts on all this? You know, like, do you like Twitter spats as much as I do?
Probably not as much as you do, but I do enjoy them. Some of them just don't make any sense, like the kid that shoved Masvidal or whatever. It's like, come on, man, that's kind of dumb. But, yeah, to see two guys that have fought before, you know, kind of chirp at each other. I enjoy it.
Somebody shoved Masvidal?
Yeah, some kid shoved Masvidal in the back or something. And then when he turned around, he was like, I'm only 17 or some shit like that. I don't know if that, who knows, maybe that's another Jake Paul fucking kid or something. But yeah, he had to kind of be held back a little bit.
Did you see when Nate Diaz flexed on some guy that was holding beers?
Yeah. I don't know. I still don't know what that's all about.
Me neither. I mean, I don't know if that guy was saying something, and so Nate Diaz flexed, but the guy had beers in his hand, it looked like, and so when Nate flinched, the guy kind of, you know, he shrugged, I guess, in a position to maybe turn, or his arms just went up in the air. It caused his drinks to spill all over him, and it was funny. I thought it was funny. He didn't come close to hitting him, but Nate was kind of being led away by security. So I don't know if that could have been ugly. I don't think Nate would have done something like that. I know he's a knucklehead and all that, but I don't think he's going to get into it with a fan. But he did his job by just doing that little quick flinch, and the kid's beers went all over him and all over the place. That had to suck for him. You know, Masvidal said, I wasn't able to catch it live. I'm trying to find what he said towards Diaz during the week. And Diaz said something back to him. Oh, just came across this. Okay, so Nate Diaz goes on December 11th, wrote, these guys don't get any better. December 11th was UFC 269. When he said these guys don't get any better, I have to imagine that was leveled at Poirier and Oliveira. And that's all he wrote was Nate Diaz was, these guys don't get any better. And Masvidal on December 15th, so he waited 4 days and he wrote, just came across this and it's so ironic that the individual who can't block low kicks, high kicks, or mid kicks is talking shit about fighters getting better. Hashtag, can you even spell double leg? Now, remember, Masvidal and Nate Diaz have been pretty cordial, in my opinion, for two guys that are straight up G's. If anything, Diaz kind of helped Masvidal by calling him out. After Diaz beat Pettis, I believe, in Anaheim, he called out Masvidal. Masvidal was coming off those wins over Askren and Till, and that's when they had the BMF match. And that took Masvidal even to another level. He was walked out by Roberto Duran. He had the belt put around him by The Rock. It was a big night for Masvidal when he beat Diaz. Diaz felt like the fight shouldn't have been stopped. We're going to have to run it back. Hasn't happened since then. They've gone in different directions. But it just seemed like a West Coast gangster had respect for an East Coast gangster, and that was it. So that kind of surprised me that he wrote that. But I bet you Masvidal's pretty sensitive because he likes to back up his guys, and he probably felt like that was a little slap at Dustin Poirier. These guys don't get any better. You know, because he's saying, I think Poirier got choked out to Habib. Now he got choked out to Oliveira. So that's when Masvidal said that. Now, that said goes, Nate Diaz the next day posts a picture of Jorge Masvidal laying on the canvas when Camaro knocked him out. And he wrote the same thing. Just came across this. He just wrote that and he posted that. Here's my thing. I enjoy all this shit, all right? But when someone's beat you, I don't know that you can post this picture of someone else beating that guy as your comeback. Because you had a chance to do that and you didn't. You know, someone else did it for you. So I don't know that that's a comeback. I don't know that he wins that little Twitter beef or whatever. The only way he wins is if Diaz has beaten Camaro and Camaro's beaten Jorge and Jorge's beaten Diaz, then you can say, well, you got me, but I also got the guy that skinned you. But that hasn't happened.
I don't even think that's enough. The only way he could possibly win is if he goes, here's me and your mom. I mean, like, I don't know what you could possibly do. Once a guy beats you, especially the way he beat him, there's just not much you can say.
Exactly. So I think I just wish some of the fighters would just pull back and save it. You know what I mean? Until you come up with a good one and then you sting somebody. They're uber popular. They have a lot of followers. They don't need to take an L in the Twitter department. You just, you know, if you took an L in the octagon, you just try and figure out how you can get it back. But John Jones was coming in at Chael Sonnen. So Chael Sonnen this past weekend was, people are trying to clarify, and I don't have all the details. I kept waiting till just before the show started to see if Junkie had posted anything. In fact, let me give it one more refresh. But over the weekend, there was an incident at the Four Seasons Hotel. I know a lot of you are like, where the hell is that? I've never seen the Four Seasons. Four Seasons is a wing inside the Mandalay Bay. Chael Sonnen loves to stay at the Mandalay Bay. He stays there a lot. And apparently, allegedly, Chael Sonnen was banging on someone's door. Some couple walked by. Something happened. Chael Sonnen was allegedly beating somebody up. Security and cops were called, and he was whisked away. What I'm hearing from the Sonnen camp is not arrested. They're making it clear that there was no domestic violence towards any women or something like that, because when you hear it's a couple, you're wondering, well, there's a woman there, you know, like, did he hit the woman or something like that? And they're saying no, that he was not arrested. He was arrested for battery, you know, detained, and I think that's the end of it. But John Jones then runs to Twitter and says, this is what you would say to me. I'm not going to do it to you. But he kind of was razzing Chael Sonnen, you know, about a possible incident involving a couple, which could be, you know, a domestic issue as well. But see, I don't know any of the details, and I don't believe Sonnen was arrested for that direct count, I guess. mm-hmm. hitting a woman. So we have to be really, really careful how we talk about this. But like I say, there was an incident there. We'll wait for more details to come out. But John Jones was magnifying it by posting it. Now, to be fair, Sonnen does not hesitate to come at John Jones. Not one bit. That part, yes. But you definitely do want to get your ducks in a row and wait to hear, you know, what the other side has to say, I think, before you tweet something like that. So we'll see.
You can win a round from Chael Sonnen, but you're not going to win the fight.
Pretty much, yeah. I hope he definitely was, you know, from what I'm hearing, it may have been a white knight incident. See, I don't want to go off what I read on Twitter or anything like that. I'm just going to wait for the police report to see if they'll specify what may have happened. But it's so unlike Sonnen. This guy, like, really enjoys life. He doesn't drink. He doesn't really act a fool. And he has so much going for him in terms of, you know, his YouTube channel. He's got a podcast. He's got the submission grappling thing going. He works for Bellator and the UFC through ESPN, has a show on ESPN. But we'll see, you know, if he did something that warrants him getting in some trouble, then he'll have to pay that. But I've always told people, be very, very careful when it comes to, you know, labeling somebody a domestic abuser or being involved in a domestic incident or pedophile stuff, because that's just something that, I mean, catches fire through the internets, and it's not fair. So we'll see. Have you heard anything else? Have you seen anything else?
No, I haven't.
Yeah, so that was a little bit of a Twitter spat with Jones saying that towards Sonnen. Who knows? He's the type that takes it down anyway. Masvidal and Diaz getting into it, whatever. But that's the fun sport that we have. And, folks, we won't be here for Thursday's show. We want to wish you a Merry Christmas today because we won't be here for Thursday's show. But we will be back the following Monday on the 27th to – you know, talk about the latest news that happens between now and then. Hopefully it's good news. Hopefully it's just sharing or laughing at some good pictures from the MMA world enjoying their Christmas. Any final thoughts goes on this final UFC card or the latest news or anything else I may have left out?
I think this has been a crazy year in regards to the amount of attention that we give the actual fights that happened in the cage and then things outside of that. It's just insane. Like, I can't believe, I don't mind talking about Logan or Jake Paul at all. It's just crazy that they're there. It's just crazy that so many high profile athletes are getting into trouble outside of the cage. Yeah, it's a weird year, man.
I think there's going to be more of that Deron Williams versus Frank Gore. I think that's going to start to catch on a little bit more, which is going to feed into the celebrity boxing world, you know? Mm-hmm. I think that sport is here to stay. What do we call it? I had a name for it the other day. I think I called it – it's like low-level sweet science, obviously, but it's high-profile, low-level boxing is what it is, or celebrity boxing, or who knows. But I think it's here to stay. Because I think he could just put wacky matchups like Tyson versus Roy Jones Jr., De La Hoya versus Belfort. Because trust me, once Showtime came along, they recognized it. There's just something there. Is it bigger than UFC, WWE, or a proper boxing match? No. But I think there's something there, you know. And then are you going to have Metallica play or, you know, some other bands? I don't know. But I don't think they're going away.
Yeah, me neither.
We'll see you all on Monday, folks. Enjoy your holidays, whatever it is you celebrate, and we'll talk to you soon. And thanks, as always, for your support. Go out there and be a champion.